The next step on the transcendental dependent arising is called knowledge and vision of things as they really are. In Pali, that's Jata Bhuta Jnana Dasana. The vision is the experience, and the knowledge is the understanding of it. In other words, the understood experience of things as they really are. Which, of course, means, in other words, insight. And it comes in this dependent arising as the next step after the meditative absorptions. So in practice that means that if one does the meditative absorptions, that one does those first in each session and uses the strength and calm of the mind which has arisen to see things as they really are. If one doesn't do the meditative absorptions, then one uses one's meditation practice in order to see things as they really are. To see things as they really are, which means insight, means in the Buddhist terminology to understand and experience the three characteristics. The three characteristics of all that exists. Anicca, dukkha, anatta, impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and corelessness. Impermanence is covered over by continuity. Because the breath keeps on arising, we keep forgetting that each breath is already finished, that this is a totally impermanent action. Dukkha, unsatisfactoriness, is covered over by change, by movement. Either we run away from it, go somewhere else, distract ourselves, move our body, whatever it may be. So dukkha is covered over by that. Primarily because we don't like it. And anatta, corelessness, substancelessness, is covered over by compactness, solidity. We have to, in order to see things as they really are, start to break down those obstacles. We have to start breaking down our concept that shows us continuity as permanence and compactness and solidity as self or substance. The first step on this inside path is to delineate mind and matter, which means to get the experience that this is not one compact whole, but that this is mind and matter. That this is or mind and body. Either way. In the meditative practice, the breath is matter, and the awareness of the breath is mind. So when we sit there watching the breath and we don't get concentrated enough to have serenity and calm, instead of discursive thinking, it is far more useful and profitable to realize these two aspects. and realize them solidly, which breaks up the first of the compactness and solidity of this person. It only breaks it up in a minor way, but you've got to start somewhere. Mind and matter are the two aspects that exist everywhere. It may not be the kind of mind that we know ourselves to have, but even a tree or any other natural phenomena has the craving for existence. Otherwise, it can't survive. So we can eventually, when we become imbued enough with the understanding of mind and matter in ourselves, also see it in all that is around us. It is internal and external. It always starts internally. We have to start with ourselves. The whole of the universe, O monks, lies in this fathom-long body and mind. So we start here with the meditation subject and extend that understanding from the meditation subject to all that we are. We are either mind or matter. And the two are interdependent, but they are not identical. And unless we have a good grasp of this very first and basic understanding of ourselves, we do not have the ability to go further into insight. We'll always be blocked by yes, but, which is the expression of skeptical doubt. Every time there's skeptical doubt, the sentence starts or the thought starts with yes, but. When we have made absolutely sure that we understand that there are two aspects of us and that mind is the one that is in charge, then we have understood this very first step into insight. Because we can see that mind is the one that orders the body around. And even the breath, which is essential to life, can be ordered around by the mind. We can tell it to stop a moment. We can tell it to go deep, to be shallow, quick, slow. Even that, although it is an autonomous action of the body, it can still be ordered around by the mind. So we have an insight into that aspect of ourselves, and we can extend it to everything around us. And when we have understood that, the next insight that arises is that this mind and this matter, which we are, is not one solid unit, but consists of heaps or movements. That each one, each thought, is not one solid thought, but a movement of thought, a movement in the mind. And matter, the body, we can actually feel with some mindfulness that there is movement. And this extends or starts out with the meditation subject. As we watch the breath intently and become concentrated enough to really be with that breath, we can notice that it has movement in it. It's not one solid thing. At least it has beginning, middle, and end. But it has constant movement in it. And as we become aware of the mind watching this breath, we can also become aware of the movement in the mind. As we realize these heaps that are actually happening within us, we get a further understanding of the nature of this person that has had this compact appearance to us. The solidity and compactness always overrides the corelessness. And as it overrides it, it is so extremely difficult to get an insight into what it means, no self. The word itself is difficult. Corelessness, substancelessness is possibly easier to handle. Void is even more difficult. So when we get an understanding of the fact that there is movement and not solidity, that this what appears so solid is actually like the dust in the air that we can see when the sunlight hits it. The same applies to this body. When we can experience that and understand that for what it is, then we gain a foothold in insight. It has to come about through the meditative practice. It won't come about by just knowing about it. It won't come about by pondering over it. It has to be an experience. But when it is an experience, it also has to be an understood experience. One has to know exactly what one is experiencing. Without knowing that, the whole experience is in vain. So the meditative practice, watching the breath or whatever it is that one is watching, brings about enough concentration, at least enough momentary concentration, which is necessary for insight. Momentary concentration means that we are momentarily absolutely fixed on the subject. Although the concentration then wavers again, that moment is usually enough to gain some insight. It is certainly not enough to gain calm, but it is enough to gain insight. And the momentary concentration can then also extend into neighborhood concentration, where the mind is also fixed on the subject, although wispy thoughts do arise, but they are not disturbing. And the watchfulness that we are aware of is that which we understand to be movement, and the breath we understand to be movement in itself. The same goes for feeling. If we're watching feeling, that in itself is also not compact and solid. It also has constant movement in it. It has constant coming and going. If we have an understanding of these two aspects, not intellectually, but experientially, we will see everything in a different light. We no longer see everything so solidly, especially ourselves, but we get a feeling for the fact that this is a totally impermanent phenomena. And we lose some of our attachment to this phenomena. Our attachment to this phenomena is based on the compactness, the solidity of it, and the continuity of it. And when we see that that is not so in our meditative experience, then we have the way open to gain a true insight. The next step on this insight path to see things as they really are is to understand causes and conditions. To understand that everything has a cause, everything that we know has a condition and is a result thereof. Which means that we realize that body, matter, all matter, is consisting of elements. Now, we have already spoken about the four primary elements. And when we consider this fact in our meditation, we can feel the temperature, we can feel the wind of the breath, we can feel the water element in sweat or saliva, and we certainly can feel the earth element in the solid aspect of the body. When we feel those, and we know them to be so, we realize that matter has as a condition those elements. It is not self-sustaining. It is not something that is self-sustaining or unconditioned. It has a condition. And having a condition, it is dependent. And being dependent, it will constantly have dukkha, because it has none of its own way of looking after it, because the elements are constantly changing in their consistency, and therefore this matter, this body, being dependent upon it, changes also in its consistency, and therefore has, most of the time, some discomfort. Now that can be experienced. It's no use thinking about it. It must be experienced first. And as it's experienced, then the thought process arises, understanding it. The same goes for mind. Mind is also a condition. When it arises as a thought process, it arises because it has had contact. It has had contact through the senses, any sort of contact through the senses, which makes feeling, perception, and then thought arise. So the condition is the contact through the sense base, which is eye, ear, and so forth, or body, with the sense object, which brings about the sense perception, the sense consciousness, the seeing or hearing, or any of them. And then with that comes the feeling, the perceiving, which is the explaining, and the thought process, which is the reaction to it, which makes karma. So when we watch this happening in the mind, in the meditative state, we will see this as a reality and not just as a description. It's not only a description, it is a description of a reality. We can see, as I've mentioned before, but I will say it again, when there is a painful feeling and the mind reacts to it and wants to get rid of it, it is due to the sense contact which makes a feeling arise, which explains it as pain, the mind explaining it as pain, and then reacting to it, disliking it, wanting to get away from it. And this is the way it works with all mind states. Mind states include also thinking. Thinking produces feeling, perception, and another reaction. Now this, if we watch, for instance, the unpleasant feeling in our sitting position, comes quite clear. And we can then see it in all our mind states, that there is a cause for it, there's an underlying condition, that it isn't self-sustaining. And seeing this in mind and matter, that neither one are self-sustaining, that neither one are independent, that they're all dependent on the conditions, gives rise to the understanding that there isn't a person in charge of this. If there were a person in charge of it, surely that person would have enough sense to only think happy thoughts and have only pleasant feelings. But seeing there isn't a person in charge, there's nothing we can do about it. But this has to come as an experience in the meditative process. And just watching unpleasant feelings or even pleasant feelings brings that about. And if the mind has become concentrated enough, it can see that quite clearly. The attention on the breath itself, as the breath moves back and forth, brings with it a feeling. As there is, it's a neutral feeling, but feeling is of three kinds. So when this neutral feeling has arisen, then there's a perception of it, an explaining of it, and then the mind reacts to it, possibly with mindfulness, if it is attentive to what it's supposed to be doing. But there's always a condition or a cause for the mind to react. And knowing this quite clearly, we can use this under all circumstances, not just in the meditation. We can use that knowing and that experiencing at other times, which means that we no longer have to believe this mind what it throws up, but we realize that what it throws up is due to a condition, to a trigger, and that we can turn the mind in a different direction. We don't have to let it run if it's unwholesome. We do no longer believe that it is my mind. We no longer believe that this, what it's throwing up, is actually so. We know that it is nothing but due to a cause, that it has arisen because of a condition. Now these insights which we deliberately put our mind on make it then possible for the mind to stay with this. The mind, having realized these things for itself, after having deliberately checked it out and to see whether it is correct, it will then be able to stay with that far better and far longer than ever before, out of meditation. It becomes sort of a natural progression that the mind knows that this is happening. Cause and condition for mind and matter also brings the understanding that there is a cause and a condition for our birth, which is craving and ignorance. Ignorance meaning ignoring the absolute truth and craving to be here. And that this condition brings about defilements, which result in unskillful actions, sometimes also, of course, in skillful actions when it is done without defilement, but in any case, actions which are based on ego and therefore have resultants. These causes and conditions which we see in mind and matter need to be extended further into our karmic resultants. Our karmic resultants are no accidents, They are not something that fate is doing to us. They are nothing but cause and condition. The Buddha's teaching is sometimes called the teaching of cause and result. And it is always meant to be a teaching of analysis, because the only way we will ever get into the understanding of these heaps which make up this phenomena is if we analyze. So it isn't a matter of just logical conclusion, but it's certainly not a matter of not logical conclusion. It is a matter of using the inner vision, that's why it's called knowledge and vision, the inner vision to realize what is happening. So it is the vision, the experience, together with the logical conclusion. Having been able to see these three first steps, mind and matter as two, all as heaps and not as solid, all as movement and not as one great big thing, and then causes and conditions for mind and matter and karmic resultants, we come to the most significant aspect of insight when we actually examine the arising and ceasing, which is the feature of impermanence. That which has arisen due to a cause and a condition must cease, because all causes and conditions also cease. So when we realize that the breath that has come in has already ceased, and another one has arisen to go out, and that one has ceased, then we get an inkling of arising and ceasing. And these aspects of the meditation practice are to be used rather than allowing the mind to think about totally non-essential aspects of past or future. Every time the mind runs away and wants to think, bring it back to one of these aspects with which we gain insight. The arising and ceasing of the breath is easy to see and easy to understand. The arising and ceasing of the mind that watches the breath is just as apparent if we become aware of the fact that there is movement. All movement has arising and ceasing in it. All movement also has irritation in it. And so we can see the dukkha in the whole thing. But the dukkha of the breath is not so apparent because we want to live. And without breath, we can't live. But in actual fact, arising and ceasing, the movement of everything that exists, constant movement is constant irritation. And constant irritation is the cause of dukkha. And there's no reason at all to be surprised that we have dukkha, and that the world is full of dukkha. Because it can't be anything else. Within impermanence, dukkha is already embedded in it. So we watch the arising and ceasing of breath, and we watch the arising and ceasing of mind as it watches the breath. And from that, we can learn to watch the arising and ceasing in all that happens to us. Whether it is an emotion, whether it is a sensation, whether it is a thought, whether it is a reaction, whether it is a physical movement. There is no physical movement without arising and ceasing. So we become quite interested at that stage in our physical movements, because they tell the story so eloquently. We cannot walk a single step without arising and ceasing. We cannot lift an arm without arising and ceasing. We can't get dressed without it. So this is an aspect which is very easy to see because it's obvious to us. And it's very interesting at that time to us because we can see the proclamation of the true Dhamma in all that we are and in all that we do. And at that time, because we can see it so clearly, it is also a moment of overcoming all doubt. It is a very necessary moment because this overcoming of doubt gives new impetus to the practice. Doubt is like a brake. It holds one back because one's got to fiddle with one's mind and worry this way or that way. When there's no doubt, there is much more strength. Energy is laid free. So the overcoming of doubt at this stage and at the same time the knowledge of comprehension. These are the two steps at this time which are happening. The knowledge of comprehension means that not only are we watching that the breath is so impermanent, not only are we watching that our movements are so impermanent, but we are investigating all five khandhas, the five aggregates of which we consist. And we know from this investigation that the breath which is matter, the movements which are matter, the mind which is the mental aspect, all of it is constantly arising and ceasing. Now this gives us the significant insight because we can see that in us and in others. We no longer need to get angry at anybody because we know it's just one of the khandhas arising and ceasing. And we no longer need to passionately want anyone because we just know it's five khandhas arising and ceasing. At this time, the five khandhas are very prominent in one's consciousness. And one watches them first, of course, in oneself. What one doesn't know about oneself, one will never know about anyone else. So we know about ourselves in the movement, in the breath, about the body. And also, of course, in its decay, in its aging, in its changeability. And we know about our mind aspect, about our feeling aspect, and we keep on looking at that in the meditative process, but also out of the meditation. Because at that time, the interest is aroused. And it is possible to stay with this kind of investigation in the meditation for a long time without being distracted. And in daily life, it is also possible to stay with that kind of investigation and not be distracted from it, not be caught again in the solid, compact aspect of oneself and others. But to constantly investigate the five khandhas, now we can see them, especially, of course, the physical khandhas, in all matters around us. And we can see that, too, as constantly changing. A tree will grow, decay, and die. Leaves will grow, decay, and die. And so does everything else around us. And that will be a very significant moment in our insight progress. Because this arising and ceasing then comes to the point in the meditation where only the ceasing is seen. The dissolution. And when we see that, because the concentration has become more more subtle, so that it sort of bypasses the arising and actually fastens on to the dissolution, to the ceasing of the breath, the ceasing of the mind moment, and again sees all that around it. When that arises, the mind can become quite frightened. And that is a moment when it is possible to have the experience of terror, because nothing can be found that one can hang on to. It's all falling apart in front of one's very eyes, constantly falling apart. And that concerns all the khandhas in oneself and all that which exists. Now, it looks so solid if we look now, but when the meditation, concentration has taken hold and the insight has come to that point, it is no longer possible to deny that all that we see is really an optical illusion. If it were not constantly falling apart, it would stay like this forever. It can't. It all has the aspect of being based on a condition and a cause, and all these conditions are constantly changing. So having come to that point and realizing this in the meditation and in one's own logical conclusion, then it is not uncommon that a terror feeling arises. What am I to do? There's nothing to hang on to. I think I'm going to leave you with that till tomorrow. So that you will want to know what happens after that.
Sand your cereals.
This has been a week's serial, hasn't it?